accession number 18265, reel 6.
Reel 6.
The next day we were taken before the commandant, charged with attempting to escape, which was ridiculous. All we were doing was getting out of our compound to trade with the main traders we traded with were the Serbs, who knew all the ropes on getting food into the camp. Were quite intrepid men, actually, then. I think all we got was 7 days hard labour. That meant you left the camp, you were confined in cells overnight, and you got a bash round the head from the camp sergeant major, Chesselman, as you entered the cells. Next day, we were taken to work with slave labour, women, who were digging a huge tank trap right the way across country there. As it turned out in the end, the tank trap never worked and never stopped the Russians in any way. We found, though, that another reprisal that the Germans were doing on us, because we were naughty boys, was very bad rations. We found when we were working, we got twice as much food as you got when we were in the camp. But I'm sure the Germans were, they were doing all in their power to persuade us to work for them. We were somewhat of an embarrassment inside the camp. The rations were something like a litre of soup, ersatz soup, per day, which had things floating in it, which were, they weren't real vegetables, they were ersatz vegetables, they called it, plus a plentiful supply of weevils on top of the soup, which you either ate as fresh meat or you skimmed them off. The bread ration varied between a German loaf, which is about like our small tin loaf, between five men a day, up to nine men per day. Well, when it got to nine men, you was getting scarcely an inch of bread. About 5 inches square. So life was a bit on the dreary side. We had no parcels, no Red Cross parcels, that is, until just before Christmas of 44, when 500 come in. Got together and we said that as we'd had no Red Cross parcels before and there was only 500 come in, we'd better eke them out as long as we could. So instead of one parcel per man per week, we had one between two. Well, these parcels made you inside the camp a very rich man, because there were the biggest currency of the camp was cigarettes, but that was followed by chocolate, coffee, soap, and that was about it, because the Germans just didn't have these items anymore. I'm sure I had a feeling that if you had enough Red Cross parcels, you could go a long way to buying your freedom if you went the right way about it. Uh, these Red Cross parcels did make a tremendous difference to our lives. Now we could trade with, as I say, mostly the Serbs for bread. The going rate for bread was 20 cigarettes, and made a big difference to your diet. We were allowed on our parole, by giving parole, to go out, a party of us allowed to go out once a week on house commando, wood commando, collecting wood from the wood to burn on the fire inside our hut, because that part of the world, it's very, very cold for, well, I'd say there was ice and snow for a good 4 months of the winter, four maybe 5 months. Now and again we left the, one occasion I was able to leave the camp because I joined a party given its parole to go out and pick up a British airman who'd probably parachuted into a field nearby and injured himself. So I volunteered for this party. On the way there, a lot of the guards in this camp were old people, not very sprightly. And on the way there, all the guard keeps saying was "Langsam, Langsam," which in German is slow, slower. And we wanted, but we couldn't hurry him up at all. We got to the field where the airman was laying, and he had broken both legs. And when we got to light, where it could be seen, he was black and blue all over, but still fairly cheerful. He really wasn't moaning very much. We'd taken a stretcher. He wasn't moaning much, and he was able to give us news of UK, which we were very short of, because the Germans... propaganda in the prison camp was really well, it was constant, and according to them we were losing the war hand over fist, and we of course if they go at it long enough, if they pump this propaganda at you long enough, you can start to half believe it. Anyway, we knew our way back to the camp, and again the old fella, the guard, was largsome, and we're saying, sod him, let's get this bloke into the prison hospital, which was just outside the prison camp. There was at least a prison hospital, as quick as we can. We got him into the hospital, and that's when we saw that he really was black and blue all over. When we left that compound to come, we had to go all the way back round the wire to get back to the main gates. And we said, well, now let's really take the mickey out of this old German. So we started striding out, but we hadn't forgotten. He had an Alsatian with him, which he kept going, "Langsam," and his voice was getting smaller and smaller and smaller as we got further away from him. In the end, he let the dog go, and it put me down. Didn't bite me. Just leant on me, sort of stood over me snarling. The old German come puffing up, and it was his turn to have a laugh now. He was saying, yeah, that a teacher. But there was a funny There was an aftermath to that. This was all 3 months before the war ended. When the war did end, the Germans left the camp, but they left the dogs behind, just abandoned them. An Alsatian attached itself to me, and whatever I did, it wouldn't leave me. Now, I shall always believe that that Alsatian had put me down that night when we were taking the mickey out of the Germans, had recognised the smell and attached himself to me because he got nobody else to attach himself to. But maybe somebody more who knows more about animals might put me right on that, but that's what happened anyway, that this Alsatian, didn't matter where I went, it was there, always there. I could leave it outside a door and it would be there when I opened it. Anyway, I'm straying a bit. War goes on, the war is going on, and the Germans are, you could see it yourself, they were getting shorter and shorter and shorter of everything. In consequence, our rations go down, so that, yes, we're hungry as well. We always was hungry in there, but we're hungrier still now. And about 4 weeks before the war was to end, our confidence man was called to the main gate where 200 men, 200 British prisoners were outside the camp, too sick to go. They'd been marched from camps in Poland for months and they were in too bad a state to go any further. So our confidence man, who was our leader, was the RSM of the 16th Parachute Field Ambulance. We were to look after, the Germans could do very little for these men. We were to look after them, etc., etc. And they would take we would have free access to the hut they were in out of the front gate of our compound. So we get these men in, and they were all British prisoners, either Dieppe or Dunkirk. So some had done 5 years prisoner. It seemed to me that the most of the illnesses were dysentery, frostbite. They were the two main ones. Well, we did have, as I've said, our senior man was the RSM of the 16th Parachute Field Ambulance. Also, the regimental quartermaster sergeant major was in the camp, and a 5 or 6 staff sergeants, all from the 16th Parachute Field Ambulance. We roped in the help of a Yugoslav doctor, and mainly these men looked after these poor prisoners the best they could. But in the few weeks of the remaining of the war, 39 of these men died, and I thought it was such a shame, really, that some of them had been prisoners for 5 years, should lose their lives right at the last knockings. So they wanted volunteers for burial parties. So I got on that. The Germans first of all said we could only do this or do that, and we said no. We had one or two who knew the Geneva Convention better than I did, who spouted it and said no, we don't do that. The Germans wanted us to bury these poor people in paper bags, thick brown paper bags. And we said, no, that's not on. They're entitled to a proper coffin. So the Germans said, well, we can't supply them, but we will supply. We had an officer who wasn't too bad, but this Hauptmann Menzel, he was quite a kindly bloke. He said, we can let you have timber and nails, and you can make a few tools, and you can make your own coffins. We said, right, that's fine. A Union Jack was made out of a blanket by, painting the colours on. We borrowed a bugle off the French. And it was arranged that we could have eight men, I think, and an NCO, eight men and a leader on this burial party. We come the day of the first person that had died, we again made a pact, right, we're gonna really make a show of this. We're going to really come out with a bit of ball. The leader of it was a sergeant major out of the South Staff's regiment, the Air Landing Battalion. If we didn't have full uniform, we'd all borrowed it so that we were properly dressed. And we did, well, we stopped the Germans and all other inmates in their tracks, whereas previously I'd noticed that when anybody died and was buried in this paper bag, nobody took the slightest notice of them, but we forced them to. Germans are a funny lot, really. They are not by any manner of means are all of them Nazis. We made such a show that a lot of them were standing as we passed them and saluted. Out of the camp we went, we slow marched, of course, out until we got to the main gates. And that's how we carried on with all these poor people that died. And as I say, there was 39 of them. One thing did happen at this time. In the area were white vans, white trucks that we didn't know much about, but they seemed to have free movement. And it transpired they were Red Cross people of Swiss nationalities going around Germany doing the best they could with the collapse that was going on. Well, one night, very not long before the war ended, there was the roar of airplane engines, very low, moonlight night. Looked up, it was Lancaster bombers, about 10 of them, and then we saw parachutes opening up, coming down, and we thought, God almighty, is somebody come to get us out? But then we realised that hanging from the parachutes was big wicker panniers. The air raids in the prison camp, you're not allowed out, you can't go out of your hut. You're confined to your hut. So it wasn't until next morning that we were given at least some of these contents, these panniers, and it was really everything that a sick person would want. Food, medicines, bandages, that sort of thing. And I think the information could have only been relayed by these white trucks patrolling the area, helping out where they could. Anyway, it's a long way over New Brandenburg from quite near the Polish border. These Lancasters had come on a long journey, really. They were, in order to drop their panniers, they come in very low, so they've got to climb again. So I really hope they got back all right, but I've never really been able to trace where they came from, who flew them. But they were there on a humanitarian mission, not bombing. Early in May, you could hear the war coming nearer and nearer and nearer. You could hear it coming, the noise of it. And sure enough, I think it was it was early in May. The Russians overran the camp merely by, there was a tank unit. They just ran a tank through the wire. The Germans knew they were coming, and all except the officer that had been kind to us, Hauptmann Menzel, and I think five medical orderlies had all left the camp, marched out, whatever their condition was in. And the night that the Russians did break into the camp, all the senior men of each nationality had got together and said, "We'll stay disciplined, stay put until the Russians come through. We won't do anything stupid. You know, we won't start going out of our own accord." Hauptmann Menzel come to our hut and said, "Would we, the British, guard the wives that of these few Germans that had been left behind?" Well, we said to him, a bit of a cheek, thinking how you treated us, but why do you want us to look after them? Well, we can't, the Russians are coming, we're not, they'll be the masters. So he said, "No, it's to prevent reprisals from other inmates of the camp." And what he was saying was the British wouldn't do it. But so we agreed, and I stayed the night in a building near the front gate with a pal of mine, Larry Ansell. And all the Germans had their wives there. God, they were terrified. They were terrified of what was coming. And so the younger ones had children. They wouldn't even go to the toilet unless you went with them. Hauptmann Menzel had given Larry Ansell his pistol. So I said to him, "What about one for me?" He thought, well, what I meant was a pistol. He thought I meant anything. He gave me a barometer, which I've still got. He gave me a barometer, which I've now given to my son. But no pistol. During the night, the political officer was also left behind. Now his propaganda was dreadful. He wanted to leave the hut during the night. Larry said to me, "What should we do?" I said, "Let him go. I'm not going to stop him."
Of what nationality?
German. He went outside and very quickly got beat up. and was glad enough to get back inside again, so nobody else tried it. So, but he was a very disliked man.
Why was he disliked?
Well, he was a political officer. He had a sly manner with him, and his propaganda, which was constantly pumped out on loudspeakers, not just to us, to other nationalities in their language, was well, the propaganda he was pumping out to the British was totally wrong, false. But you don't always get the right news in a prison camp. You can realise it's difficult. You don't have newspapers delivered. When we could contact the Dutch that were there, I think they had a radio, a secret radio working, a receiver, where they did get some news. But we knew well enough that what the Germans were saying to us could not be true because of the time that we were taken prisoner. We were doing so well. We were well on the way to winning the war. Russians, daylight the next morning, they again called the seniors of each nationality together, and they gave us bounds in which were quite generous, about 5 mile radius around the camp, which we could go to. We could take anything we liked off the Germans, providing they didn't want it. They were going to do nothing. That wasn't their way, you know. They weren't going to look after us. You look after yourself, but you can take what you like off the Germans.
What impression did the Russians make on you?
Pardon?
What impression did the Russian forces make on you?
Honourable. The Germans were so afraid of the Russians that it was unbelievable, but I believe this was really, I think a lot of the Germans there knew that the German troops had done bad things in Russia, had done bad things. It was a tank unit that ran through the camp. A lot of the tanks lined up outside the camp. A good many of them driven by women. The tanks weren't, they weren't as good as German tanks, or even ours, I don't think. Some of them were our models, obsolete models. But they struck me as being a disciplined force. I certainly didn't see any atrocities committed by them in any way. I don't believe they really got up to anything bad. They were living off the land as well. They didn't. They